Case number 20-1256 EDA, United Power Inc. Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Patrizia for the petitioner, Mr. Glover for the respondent, Mr. Steele for the interveners.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I'm Charles Patrizia of Paul Hastings Law Firm. The issues before the court of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission aired in asserting jurisdiction. FERC failed, indeed, determined would not be necessary material factual issue necessary to make its jurisdiction. And then second, FERC erred in asserting exclusive jurisdiction over all issues related to termination and exit paid by in order to terminate membership. Our argument is FERC.
Can I ask you to step back and first address the commission's argument that none of your three major arguments were preserved. Let's just go through each one.
There's two answers, please. The first is the issues were preserved. The hearing cited in the brief are references in Joint Appendix at 576, specifically identified the issue of whether or not state law complied with.
Well, the FERC's position is that none of the language you point to in your petitions before FERC are specific enough under this court's very strict rules about preserving arguments in the FERC context. We've said this is, quote, an unusually strict requirement that will not be ignored by the courts. And FERC's position is that none of the things you point to in all three arguments were sufficiently specific to put FERC on notice.
There's two answers again. Mm-hmm. First is that although the court correctly says that rule is strict, that the issues must be raised, the court has also made it clear that all that is required is to put the commission on notice of the issue. Fairly clear it has an issue to decide. Here, the commission is clearly because the commission itself said, both in the March order and in August, that it was aware of those issues and it was specifically not determining those issues.
Can you just referring to the contract issues? Or is it, pardon, you're referring to the to which issues now?
We're referring to the state law issues.
Okay, all right.
Specifically,
okay, that's
whether or not
right.
The ACO is properly.
Can you, the commission cites our decision in Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It seems to me to be right in point. The argument there, the argument there before the court was that the commission should have considered state law before it issued its order. And in its petition to the commission, the utility said, having the retail utility there, a certification requirement is an impingement on Indiana's jurisdictional authority. And we said that wasn't enough. We said that was too general.
Yes, sir.
It looks just like this case.
Well, I think the other point here to make is that United Power specifically lodged with the commission testimony in the underlying secrecy, which specifically—
No, you have to raise it in your petition. It has to be raised under the statute. The argument has to be raised in the petition to the commission.
It has to be raised before the commission in the objections and in the notice. That logic was specifically done to the commission to identify the state law issues that were a concern mm-hmm. and were not being addressed. And the commission then said, to the extent United Power is raising state law issues, we're simply not going to determine them. Rather than the commission saying, oh, gee, confused about what state law issues there are, the commission said, we're not going to determine any of them.
But then in your application for rehearing, you argued that FERC should wait for the state court proceedings to conclude. You didn't argue that FERC should decide the state law issues itself.
FERC had told us that it did not want to decide those issues and it wanted to defer to the state. Therefore, if FERC continued in that view and did not want to decide those issues, it should wait for the state law determination.
Right, but now before this court, you're arguing that FERC should have decided the state court. If it wasn't going to wait for the state court proceedings, it should have decided the state law issues.
Exactly, Your Honor.
But you did not raise that argument before FERC.
FERC having said to us that it was not going to determine those issues and it would defer to the courts, we took FERC at its word. But that means that FERC, under Michigan v. EPA, cannot assert jurisdiction. If FERC wanted to assert jurisdiction, it would have to have those state law issues decided. FERC wants to defer it.
That may well be true, but I don't believe you raised that argument before FERC.
I said it was premature for FERC to take jurisdiction without those issues being decided. We noted that if FERC wanted to defer to the states, it had that ability to do that. FERC does that routinely in state law issues.
Even if you're right that that particular issue was preserved, that is, that FERC had to wait for the state commission to act as opposed to FERC deciding it itself, what's the possible? FERC says, look, we had a rate filing before us. We had to decide that. And we have lots of cases that say we don't intrude in FERC's allocation of priority in the way it decides cases.
Exactly.
So how could we possibly second guess that? I mean, FERC made this decision. It has an enormous amount of discretion to decide how it will act. It says it had a rate filing that it had to decide.
There are two issues buried in that, Your Honor. I want to parse them separately.
Okay.
The first is that FERC has no duty to decide a rate case if it doesn't have jurisdiction over
the utility. I'm not asking you about that question. I'm asking you about the other question. You have two arguments. One is, as I understand it, you have a jurisdictional argument, right?
Yes, sir.
That FERC couldn't act without resolving the state issue. And then isn't your second argument that even if it's not jurisdictional, FERC should have just waited for the state to act?
No.
That's not what you're arguing?
No.
Oh, I misunderstood you.
To the degree FERC asserts it has jurisdiction, it has to make a finding, a necessary factual predicate and legal predicate.
Mm-hmm.
It has no duty to decide a rate case. It has no duty even to accept unless it has jurisdiction. The issue of whether it has jurisdiction is preparatory predicate for the determination of jurisdiction. If it has no jurisdiction, determining the rate would be nunctus officio. It has no jurisdiction to hide it.
Have you said anything yet about preservation of the argument challenging jurisdiction, commission's jurisdiction? And not the conditional jurisdiction with the state issues, but rather the jurisdiction that you, as I understand it, point to, for which you point to page 541, note 6. Said anything further about that?
FERC only has jurisdiction in Tri-State if Tri-State is not owned exclusively by Pembroke Alliance. To the degree that MIECO's admission is the predicate for the determination Tri-State is not fully owned by cooperative utilities, then that issue was preserved. Indeed, we spent a lot of time in our materials before FERC on the issue of whether MIECO was proper.
Well, maybe I'm mistaken. I thought your threshold issue was as you just said a moment ago, the secondary, which was even if they had jurisdiction, they should have waited, right?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Even if they have jurisdiction, then they did not properly determine the issues related to first of all.
Okay. All right. Good enough. I want to go back to the beginning as to whether they have jurisdiction. Okay? To begin with. And as I understand it, you say you preserve that issue by mentioning it at 541 in the hearing. Right?
541 and 547.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at 541. Maybe 547 is more illuminating. 541, it's a footnote 6, which it doesn't degrade it. There's no mention of the word jurisdiction. There's no argument made. There is what appears to be more an address to the commission's discretionary decisions. Or here's how it reads. United Power notes the commission recognized there are significant state law issues, blah, 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 and that those issues are before the Colorado PUC, is better suited to determine the state law issues. Commission's determination of Tri-State's jurisdictional status while the state law issues remain to be fully determined by a better qualified state utility commission is premature as well as inefficient. Now, premature and inefficient are not jurisdictional criteria.
Well,
and there's no suggestion that you're talking about lawful jurisdiction.
I would say to Your Honor, the statement that it is premature for FERC to take jurisdiction while there are state law issues pending is exactly a question of FERC's jurisdiction.
Well, you might have said so then and called their attention to that and let them respond to it.
But FERC acknowledged that we had called their attention to it by staying both the March and August order, that it was not going to determine the state issues, and it recognized that those issues would have impact on FERC's jurisdiction.
What is it at 547 I should look at?
Yes, sir. In the beginning of the second page, talking about whether the commission's analysis of this government begins and ends with highway, and citing only the membership of the charter and principle of territory summary concludes.
Any mention of jurisdiction?
Then the issue of jurisdiction requires is unless exclusive issue takes whether is.
I mean, that may well be true as a merits matter, but it doesn't seem fairly raised by the arguments that you made before FERC. I mean, if FERC was to decide the state law issues, there's no briefing at all to FERC about how those state law issues should be decided or how they should think about those state law issues. I mean, it's hard
no
to
briefing, no briefing on FERC issue. As FERC said, we're not.
Well, they said that in their initial order, and then you made an application for rehearing and did not say they must decide the state law issues because that's a predicate of their jurisdiction. Instead, you raised all these arguments about the bylaws and articles.
If the AGO's membership, FERC has, FERC said, again, we're not going to decide those issues. The decision on those issues, FERC recognized that this isn't some obscure issue. FERC was not aware. AGO membership was.
You also argue that FERC's interpretation of cooperative ownership runs afoul of the Federal Power, right?
Yes, sir.
But maybe you could show me in the petition before FERC where you made that argument. I see where you made an argument that it violates tri-state bylaws, but I didn't see where you made an argument that it violated the Federal Power. Could you show us that?
Well, for example, again, turning to 5.7 appendix, note the commission, no analysis of tri-state's own charter, longstanding principles of cooperative arrangement, undertook otherwise, noting a couple of pages that membership issue, people was putatively requiring.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This court held earlier, called River King, that a cooperative is an entity which is owned by its consumers.
Yeah, that's the merits. I was asking where you raised the argument. Do you have anything else?
I did have one question about If you were to receive a favorable ruling in the Colorado state courts, do you think FERC would be required to revisit its jurisdictional holding? What would be the path forward if you were to prevail in Colorado state court at this point?
Yes, FERC any basis under 201F. Exclusive. Remember, holding state court makeovers. Remember, there would be no basis for jurisdiction. Congress. Yeah. Tri-state's interest being holding.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from FERC.
May it please the court, I'm Matthew Glover, and I represent the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. It's great to be back in the courtroom, and I really want to thank the court staff and Cliff Sislak and Ann for everything they've done. And I think I'll start with the jurisdiction questions that we've been discussing with my friend. Judge Tatel, we think you're absolutely right that Indiana regulatory is on point. And I would actually note something that the court said in Indiana regulatory, which was it matters not whether FERC is aware of the issue. And there the context was someone else had raised the issue in their rehearing petition. So it matters not whether FERC is factually aware of the issue. It matters whether this specific party has raised the issue. And it distinguished the sort of strictness of this jurisdictional provision, which the court said many times, with a traditional exhaustion provision that could be waived. I'd like to respond to the argument regarding the footnote. It's footnote 6 at JA 541. In their reply brief at page 21 at the top, they say this court has previously found jurisdiction where an issue was only raised in a footnote. And they cite one case called Columbia Gas. And that's just not true of Columbia Gas. And I'm aware of no case where the court has said you've sufficiently raised something. But in Columbia Gas, the court quoted the rehearing petition. It had a quote of a sentence from page 12. And then it followed up with a sentence describing that.
Wait, are you saying that you can't raise an argument in a footnote?
If I were
making the rule, I would agree with you. But is there any way the D.C. Circuit has said that?
So the D.C. Circuit has said that about identical language in the SEC's jurisdictional provision, the SEC jurisdictional provision 15 U.S.C. 78Y subsection C1. Has the same language, no.
Yeah, and we've said in that context that you can't raise
I believe in a footnote. Case, it was last year, a case called Abbott. I'm embarrassed, I don't know what I'm talking about. It was argued December 1st, the same day as two cases I had argued. But the court there criticized a party for citing stuff in the background of their brief, and it cited some of the.
Okay, the background of the brief, I've got you.
Yeah,
I can't do that. But where's the footnote?
And it cited there, I believe, some other cases related to where this court has said in its own case law, you can't raise something in a footnote.
Is that really what you want to rely on, Mr. Glover, that it was in a footnote as opposed to the substance of the footnote doesn't preserve the issue?
So I think I have all of those arguments. Let me back up and say, first of all, we think it's in a footnote to the introduction section, and so that wouldn't do it. We also think that it substantively did not say you must decide the Colorado state law issues or you don't have jurisdiction.
Well, that's at least relevant. Now, I mean, look, we have innumerable cases in which a party wants to preserve an issue by which the panel is bound. It's preserving it for en banc or for Supreme Court review. And it puts it in a footnote. We don't say you've waived it. It preserved it.
Yeah, but I think this is a stricter standard because it's about raising it to the commission so that the commission can decide something. And again, I'm not aware of a case where you've said you can put it in the background of your brief or you can put it in a footnote. But substantively, we don't think that footnote actually raises the timing jurisdictional challenge they're asserting.
Well, now you're onto it. So, right, there's no, I mean, that's my question.
I think you were asking my friend on the other side about JA 541. Note 6, and we don't think 541 note 6 says the argument they're presenting today. you know, it says note that, you know, we note the commission has recognized there's significant state law issues. And this is premature as well as inefficient. Sounds like the commission's discretion, like you were discussing. And I think this contrasts significantly with one of the cases they cited in a bullet point, I believe at page 22 of their brief. It's the Louisiana case. That had to do with a pipeline segment. And there, the petitioner had raised in rehearing, if you decide that this segment of the pipeline is a unique segment, then you need to decide two additional issues. And first, in the court's opinion saying there was enough to have raised it in the rehearing petition, it noted that the issue they were now pressing before this court was identical to that statement. If you decide this, you need to decide two more things first. That first issue that they stated there. This footnote doesn't even do that and say, if you reject our arguments about the articles of incorporation and the bylaws and the sham transaction, you must then decide whether or not MIECO is a, its bylaws or its purchase agreement complies with state law. It doesn't even do that.
But what about your colleague's argument that FERC had already indicated quite clearly that it would not address the state law issues? And so in the context of FERC saying, you know, we will not address the state law issues, they didn't then make further arguments about state law in their application for rehearing.
Your Honor, the commission stated what it had held and what it was not deciding, but they didn't make the argument that you have violated your jurisdiction and you must decide these issues. Again, they didn't make that argument in that footnote. And again, when the commission stated what it stated in the first and the second rehearing order was just recapitulating basically, here's what we've decided, here's what we haven't decided. It wasn't responding to some argument that you need to decide this. The commission.
So what is FERC's obligation though to properly determine that it has jurisdiction? So, I mean, under Michigan v. EPA, it seems that you had to have made some determination of state law before asserting jurisdiction, or at least arguably that was a requirement that the commission had to meet. So if the commission fails to make a proper jurisdictional finding, and then a party fails to exhaust that argument, now FERC is allowed to assert jurisdiction over an area without proper reasoning? I mean, is that where we are?
So I'm going to take a quick drink. Sorry, it's been a while since I did this first.
Same for us.
I would make a couple of points. Again, the 313B or 16 USC 825LB is jurisdictional as to this court's jurisdiction to raise that argument.
So yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying like that. Yeah.
But if I can take your hypothetical a step forward and say, like, let's say FERC or did what the EPA did and actually said, we're not deciding whether or not MIECO is a member. Because the EPA and Matt said we have authority to decide what's Indian country. We're just saying this is in question so much. FERC had said, there's a question about whether or not you're a jurisdictional entity. And so we're going to pretend you're one and, you know, exert jurisdiction. And they didn't raise that on rehearing. In this case, you would still have to reject it because they didn't raise it on rehearing. But they could come back with a declaratory petition to FERC tomorrow, or maybe after seeing the red brief, and say, gee, you are exceeding your authority every time you assert jurisdiction by not deciding whether or not there's jurisdiction. But the commission was clear here that it did decide for purposes of section 201F, 16 USC 824, subsection 10. MIECO was a member. It went through the bylaws. It went through that. And it went through its analysis pointing to Enron, K.N. Wattenberg.
I mean, the commission looked at one. It looked at the underlying documents, the corporate documents, and it put aside state law. So it wasn't actually making a full jurisdictional finding. I mean, because FERC acknowledges that the state law issues were relevant, but did not consider those state law issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's paragraph 76 of the declaratory order. FERC acknowledges that it's not deciding those state law issues.
But that they're relevant and that they are not being decided.
That they could have an impact. The commission was saying, this is a declaratory order proceeding. You've given us this record. On this record, we've made a determination on the federal law question of whether Tri-State is jurisdictional under 201F, we're determining that you are jurisdictional because we think you are no longer wholly owned. We were interpreting that part of 201F as what's wholly owned by non-jurisdictional entities. We're not addressing state law issues. And again, we were saying if something changes on state law, if something changes on the facts, if MIECO tomorrow, or Marubeni owns MIECO, if tomorrow or yesterday, Marubeni had sold MIECO to the Department of Energy, you'd come forward and say, whether MEACO is an owner or not doesn't matter. The Department of Energy is an entity of the United States. We would be exempt under 201F, right? The commission was ruling on the record before it deciding the federal law issues.
So would the commission be required to revisit its jurisdictional holding if United Power prevailed in Colorado State Court?
If someone, certainly United Power could in the ongoing proceedings or could initiate its own declaratory order proceeding saying, we have the state court ruling. We think that nullifies MEACO's membership. We think it nullifies it going forward or going backwards. That would depend on sort of what's going on there. And the commission would, you know, have the opportunity to say, does that change our decision? We made a decision under 201F. And on a different record, we might make a different decision. It's similar to sort of the distinction between the Delta Montrose case. The commission decided on the record there that under 201F, Tri-State was exempt because it was owned solely by public utility members. Here, it decided on the record here. Factually, Your Honor, there is some notes. I know the 28J opinion noted this. Tri-State now has two additional non-utility members. So a ruling on MEACO's membership, I think you would still need to address whether those other non-utility members are exempt entities, et cetera. I'd like to just quickly pivot to respond to one other point in the reply brief. In the reply brief at page 27, they described it as an alternative argument not made in the first rehearing order that the commission treated the exit charge as a charge or fee for or in connection with provision of jurisdictional services. That's quite clear in the second rehearing order at JA 94, paragraph 5. The commission quotes section 205A, which is 824DA, and italicizes that language for in connection with. So I don't think you can argue the commission didn't make a determination as to that.
Well, I mean, it's an assertion. There's no argument for it. I think it says, or at least in connection with, right? Directly affects, or at least is in connection. Correct? Paragraph 5. What's the page on that, Mr. Glover?
I believe it's JA 90.
Yes. Paragraph 5.
Yeah, section 205A refers to all rates, charges made, demanded, received by any public utility. I know I'm in the red light.
Or in connection with.
Or in connection with an italics, the transmission or sale of electric energy leverage to the jurisdiction of the commission. End quote. That's quoting the statute. Tri-State's exit charge falls within this.
It's in connection with, right?
Yeah, with the provision including the for in connection with. Or in connection with.
No, but is it for or is it in connection with?
The commission is saying that it falls into that provision that includes. You know, I think
but it's got an or.
Sorry?
It's got an or. It says for or in connection with.
Yes. And it's saying that.
So is it, which one is it?
The commission didn't say whether it's for or in connection with. It said it fit within that provision that covers the jurisdiction.
Well, what do you think?
I think that it's at least for or in connection. It's at least in connection. Paul, let me say, Your Honor.
I don't blame you. You can't go beyond what your client has said. That's fair.
Okay. And I just sort of to give you the lawyer's view on the law, I think it's fair to say that for is more direct than in connection with.
Yeah, no question
so
about
in connection
that.
With being broader, it's at least in connection.
Okay, fine. That's great. Okay.
I know I'm over time if the court has no other questions.
I don't have any idea of anything. Okay, we'll hear from the intervener then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please, the court. Simon Steele on behalf of interveners, responders, respondents. Just to be clear, that is on behalf of Tri-State, in part of interest to Tri-State members, Northwest.
Mr. Steele, it's very difficult to hear you. Could you raise the, I think the whole podium comes up. Oh, okay.
There's a button there. Is that any better?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. On behalf of the respondents, we agree with everything that Burke has said, his brief said, as you're aware. So I'd just like to make a couple of points and then answer your questions about that. If I can just go in reverse order first and just address the preemption issue. The commission obviously decided this was a rate charge for or in connection with service, as you just discussed. However, sections 205 and 206 of the FBA make no distinction between rates and charges, and classifications, practices, and regulation effectiveness, rates and charges. If we have a practice or a regulation or a rule or a contract affecting charges, must file just charges, must determine just and reasonable, just as must determine charges. As such, while we agree with it's properly charges here, properly charges, we submit it doesn't matter. United essentially concedes pages 46 to 48. Initial brief that exit charges in this case, at least classifications, tri-state charges in its west, and exit charges regularly something that the commission addresses within its jurisdiction. United, therefore, ends up intending that there is trichotomy. There's three types of things. FBA. Wholesale charges, exclusive jurisdiction. Retail generation matters, state exclusive jurisdiction. And then there's this third category of things directly affecting charges and rates, which supposedly current jurisdiction. They cite no precedent supporting that. There are tons of Supreme Court precedents which cite the same. The nature of the scheme is it's exclusive, it's a dichotomy, it's either one or sometimes very fine, it's either a state isn't concurrent jurisdiction. And in narrow, in 2020, it's called hell. Classifications, practices, regulations, etc. Just briefly, if I may pivot to the jurisdictional issues and bypassing the waiver issues discussed. As Judge Rao pointed out, if the issue is preserved, it's preserved in footnote 6 or page 5. That footnote does not say FERC should decide itself. It says the state agency should decide it. Indeed, specifically, it says this is a decision should have later in 2020, as we cite page 12, footnote 12, Hillcourt answered that question. Its answer was, that is not our decision to make. We see to decide questions.
Any questions?
No, thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think you're out of time. And counsel was out of time, right? Yeah, okay. Mr. Pregizio, you can take 2 minutes.
Very briefly. Hearing. Said that as such, Vieco is not a member. I state fully. The result of the declaratory order analysis is that the commission has overstepped, taking Vieco's order. Secondly, the language is for or in contract for the sale of electricity. The Supreme Court steps unsafe is not cannot be in connection
is your view of the intervener's argument about the fact that even if it's not a rate, it's directly affecting a rate?
The Supreme Court has said not enough for it to affect the rate. It must be targeted in order to feel the rate. Certainly a FERC aided in a conflict. That would be conflict. FERC didn't argue. It are field. Here are the Supreme Court.
Thank you. Case is submitted.